Does success, however you measure it, determine happiness? Or does happiness help you along the road to success? Well, that's what this week's guest discusses. This is the Thrive Podcast, the podcast which gives you the opportunity to, well, thrive. So welcome to another edition of the Thrive Podcast, the podcast go-to broadcast, if you like, for professional high-performance athletes as they seek wellness, mental health in the competitive world of sport. Now, with us today is another very, very special guest because he's written 11 books. He's a well-known speaker, particularly down under, but the world over. And he's written one book which kind of says it all, really, and I think everybody will be absolutely delighted to hear from him because he's written a book called Being Happy. It doesn't go much better than that. He is, of course, Andrew Matthews. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Nice to be with you, Keith. Thank you.
I want to start with like the first like really important thought that I have, and that is, why does happiness matter for athletes? And is there a correlation between happiness and success?
All the research shows that we perform better when we're happier. Managers solve problems 20% faster when they're happier. You might be interested to know that a doctor will be 30% more accurate in diagnosing illness when he's happy. And we all know that we have more energy when we're happy. So whereas 40, 50 years ago, we just had this suspicion that it's nice to be happy, now all the research from the field of positive psychology shows that we perform better when we're happy. The myth says that success will make me happy, but the fact is that happiness makes me successful. And so happiness is no longer an optional extra. Happiness is your foundation.
And following on from that, Andrew, I've always enjoyed the quote that happiness won't make you grateful. It's gratefulness that will make you happy. But we're talking to high-performance athletes, people who are seeking elite performances, number one, trophies, etc. And we look at, if you look at, for example, many athletes, they are constantly seeking the next big thing, the next tournament, the next goal, the next fight. So surely that almost circumnavigates what we've just said. If you are happy, then surely it's hard to constantly seek that next challenge, isn't it?
I think you can do both. I think we've got to be grateful for what we have. And if we look at what it is that all happy people have in common is that they find little things to be grateful for. Like, you know, what do I enjoy about being a tennis player? What do I like about getting up in the morning and being on the court at 6 a.m.? What do I like about my coach? What do I like about the opportunity to play doubles with a buddy? So we're looking for things in our daily life that say, this is so much better than flipping burgers, for example. But at the same time, then we get excited about where we're going. So we're doing both at the same time.
Over to you, Alan. Sorry. Excuse the pause.
Sure. So I remember a story that you mentioned when you were working with the golfer Nick Faldo. And after he won the British Open, he actually mentioned how you had helped him.
Yes.
And you say you know very little about golf. You're not like a high performance expert for golfers. How did you help him? What made the difference?
Well, I would like to say that the number one golfer in the world came looking for my help, but that wasn't the case. David Ledbetter is a successful and a pretty well known golf coach, and he was at the time helping Faldo, I think, with his swing and with his entire golf game. He was helping Sandy Lyle. And so David Ledbetter started sharing my book, Being Happy, with his golfing students. I knew nothing about this. And it was only after Nick Faldo had won the British Open at Muirfield in a nail-biting finish, and he appeared to everyone to be a lot more relaxed in the process of this final round of winning the British Open. And so the press said to him, what was the difference? How come you were not quite the normal Nick Faldo today? And Nick said, and I need to thank him for this because it sold a lot of books. Nick said, I read this book called Being Happy. And he was kind enough. He wrote me a letter or two and we were in touch there. The fact is that I know nothing about golf, but it gets back to our original point that everything changes when we relax. Everything changes when we feel good about the moment. And so it doesn't matter how good your strokes are in practice. It matters how you feel about yourself when you're on the court and in the match.
I want to ask you this. What is happiness?
In many ways, it's feeling good about who you are. And there's been so many books written and debates had about whether happiness is more about finding meaning or whether happiness, some people say happiness doesn't matter that much because they're thinking of pleasure. My take on happiness, it's about feeling good about who you are and feeling that you're doing something meaningful, doing something that matters. And it's also about at least liking yourself. You know, if you're a tennis player and you're always down on yourself and you're criticizing yourself, then not only are you not going to be happy, but you're not going to squeeze the best performance out of yourself. Because in a way you think you deserve to be punished anyway. And so it's about getting up every day and saying, I feel good about who I am and this journey I'm on. And I'm not perfect, but I'm getting better. And I've got a roadmap and I've got things I'm working on. And I know where I'm headed and I'm headed to be a champion, but I'm also heading to be a whole person, a package, because you've got to feel good about who you are. You've got to feel good about the friends around you, your coach. You've got to feel good about your whole journey.
You know, it's interesting. I just want to ask one quick question because you worked with Nick Faldo, and I'm a bit of a golf fan, and I remember Nick Faldo was constantly seeking perfection in his swing, and that's why he changed his swing originally, I think, and that's why he went to David Ledbetter. Surely that search for perfection is one way you will end up being unhappy rather than happy. Would that be correct, Andrew?
Well, there have been studies about which Olympic athletes perform the best. And it appears to be those who are hell-bent on perfection actually end up not performing as well as everyone thought they were going to. And so there has to be, and I think it's the same for everyday life as well, there has to be an ability to say, well, my shots aren't going to be perfect, I'm not going to be perfect, but I'm putting everything I have into everything I do, and that's what I can do today. And once I've done that, that's all I can hope for.
So many athletes, they are very hard on themselves. They are perfectionists. They want to become the best in the world, and often they grew up with the understanding that you need to be very ambitious and almost hard on yourself and unsatisfied to get to the top. How would you help such an athlete to shift their perspective of their world and to really like focus more on well-being and to focus more on loving themselves independent of outcomes?
Yeah, I think, Alan, you raise a really good point because if we look at a couple of tennis players who seem to have so much ability and potential but took a while to win Grand Slams, one was Ivan Lendl, who I think lost four Slam finals, and the other was Andy Murray, who lost four. And interestingly, Andy Murray got Ivan Lendl on board to help him to finally win his first Grand Slam. So it is so important that we are accepting of ourselves and our best effort. And before I get to your question, I'd like to say that if you don't, let's put it this way, we get to live the life that we feel we deserve. And if you don't believe that you deserve to be a champion, either a club champion or a professional champion, then in many ways you will subconsciously sabotage your efforts. And it could be through injury. It could be through making dumb decisions in critical matches. It could be terminating coaching relationships, all kinds of things that we will do, because at the very basic level we say to ourselves, I don't really deserve this. And so it is critical that, as you say, Alon, we begin to at least like ourselves, and we begin to love ourselves and say, I'm not perfect, I'm putting in my best effort, and I'm growing each day. And one of the most important things is that we begin to surround ourselves with people who we love and trust and who will love us back. And that's a really tough thing if you're a teenager and you've got one of those tennis dads, which, you know, like so famous for getting thrown out of tournaments or whatever the case may be. But as we have the opportunity as a professional athlete to make some decisions about who we spend time with and who supports us, we've got to get people around us that we love and respect. Because at the same time, whilst we might sabotage our own efforts, if we don't believe we deserve it, if we don't like people in our team, then we're not going to be pulling so hard for them.
In terms of happiness, Andrew, to strip it down, what would be your main pieces of advice to a professional athlete, high performance athlete, to actually teach him to become him or her to become happy, contented, self-assured, self-accepting? What kind of tips could you provide? Because I don't think it's something that happens straight away. We all live life through our own, you know, background filters. How would you go about advising a professional athlete to be all of those things? What tips?
Okay. These things work for almost anybody. Number one is wherever you are, the first step to happiness is acceptance. Whether you're injured, whether you're not where you want to be in your tennis career, whether you're not living where you want to live, whether you don't have the money that you want, the first step is you say, sometimes I didn't want to be here, but this is where I am and this is where I start. So many of the population live their whole life saying, it's not fair, I'm a victim, I don't like it. And at some stage, you've got to say, this is reality, this is where I am, and I accept where I am. That's number one. It's like when you get a bad call in a match. The only way that you move on is you basically say, I didn't like it, but this is where I am, and now I move on. And so it is for any one of us who say, I want to be somewhere else. I want to be doing better. I want to be in a different situation. You say, step one, this is where I am. It's not necessarily where I want to be, but this is where I start. Number two is gratitude. The the thing that sets happy people apart is they have a habit of saying, what do I like about my life? What do I like about where I live? What do I like about being a tennis player? What do I like about having the discipline of having to practice every day? What do I like about being fit? What do I like about the travel? You actually build up these reserves in your mind of saying, this is what's good about my life, and I feel blessed, and it's not perfect, but this is what I like about it. In other ways, we make a decision that we live one day at a time. We say, this is my mission for today, and I'm going to enjoy it. And I can't fix everything, but I can fix some things today, and this is my focus. So we live life in 24-hour compartments. So those are three things that can help us start to move toward being a happy person every day.
So, Andrew, one theme that seems to be really occurring in this conversation is that our thinking affects how we feel. And I remember you once saying that we create our reality twice, I think you said, right? Once in our mind and then in reality. Can you explain that again, and can you share with us how that relates to athletes?
Everything happens twice, first in our mind, and then it shows up in our life. And so in a simple example, if you want to drink a glass of water, you see yourself, we're not conscious of it because we've become skilled at it, but you see yourself picking up the glass of water and then you do it. Or if you want to hit a slice backhand, you see yourself hitting that slice backhand and leaning into it, and you hear the strings on the ball, and as that becomes implanted in your mind of this is how I hit a slice backhand, then you can actually have it show up in your life. And that is true for absolutely everything. If you want to give a speech in front of an audience, you see yourself as being comfortable and enjoying it, and then you're able to go out and do it. So not only for the little things, but for the big things, in terms of if you want to be a champion, it has to be that you've pictured it and you continue to picture it in your mind, and then that becomes a part of your life. So we're not talking about just the occasional thought, but we're talking about, if you like, the law of attraction as well. We move toward what we think about. And if we think about what we don't want, then we move toward what we don't want. So everything has to be the things that we think about and the things that we become comfortable with show up in our life. So if you're uncomfortable with money or success or with people celebrating you, then you will subconsciously find ways to avoid that kind of success or attention, even though you actually think, I want to be a champion. So you need to see yourself as the whole package, as being not only a tennis champion in the instance of tennis, but you need to see yourself as being comfortable as, if you like, a celebrity, as being comfortable as being somebody who's going to be invited to speak to the media, as being comfortable even with the comfortable lifestyle, which might mean you start to see yourself in 5-star hotels and being comfortable in that, and being comfortable with having the money that you haven't had in the past. And some people say, well, you know, I'd really be comfortable with all of that, but in actual fact, they're not. So that needs to be a part of our entire thought process, that this is what I am now. This is my new life. And as we become comfortable with every aspect of being a champion, then we move toward that.
This is so interesting, because so many people and also athletes do the exact opposite. They focus on their problems, or they focus on the things they worry, like they focus on not wanting to lose a match and not wanting to humiliate themselves. So actually what you're saying is that if you focus on these things too much, you're almost programming yourself for them to happen.
The number one message that I would have for any aspiring athlete is your mission in life is to focus on what you want. And the clearest example we can find is if you say to yourself, don't hit a double fault, and we've all done that, this is the essence that your mind works on pictures. And if you say to yourself, don't hit a double fault, you have a picture in your mind of a double fault. And so you are moving toward hitting a double fault. Your mind cannot work on the reverse of an idea. Your mind cannot work on a negative idea. You cannot say to yourself and have any success, don't miss it. Don't hit it long. Don't trip over. You always need to have in your mind a picture of what you want, whether it's the shot, whether it's the game you're playing, or whether it's the life you're creating. And that is the essential difference of a champion and somebody who never quite makes it. When Tiger Woods would be on the green and he's putting for the championship, he's the guy that says, this is what I want. And his mind is so strong that no matter what is going on around him, he's saying to himself, this is what I want. Whereas the other guys, the guys that never quite make it, are the ones who say, don't screw it up, don't screw it up. And there it is.
In terms of results, Andrew, because let's face it, a professional athlete is very focused on their results. You can't get away from that. But what can an athlete do? Obviously, most athletes are young, impressionable to some degree. How can you convince them? What words can you say to them? Say, look, it's not all about the results. Because they probably, at that age particularly, won't believe you.
Yeah, I get it, Keith. That basically we say, well, it's it is all about the results. Well, probably you really want to have a – you'd like to think that you're going to have a coach around you somewhere that is going to help you to say it's about this game that we're putting together and it's not just all about what happened today. On a day-by-day basis, and we get back to how happy people operate and how champions operate, if we can always ask us when we're disappointed, when things haven't worked out, if we can say, what is good about this? What do I take from this? What's one good thing that I can take from having gone down 6-1, 6-love? You know, what do I learn from this? And that is what champions do. And that is what happy people do. They're always able to say, I don't like what happened, but what is one good thing? What is one good thing that came out of this?
So this brings me to another topic. As an athlete, we do constantly lose, right? And you mentioned like it's important to find something good in every defeat. But generally, how do happy people relate to pain and suffering and setbacks? And what do they do differently than everyone else?
Well, we learn most from our failures and our losses. Success we celebrate, but we don't learn much. But failure and losses, we tend to go away and we tend to give a lot more thought to what did I do because it hurt so much. So the good thing is that we do learn if we give ourselves the opportunity, we do learn a whole lot more from losses than we learn from wins. Someone also said, well, it was probably Frank Sinatra, the best revenge is massive success. And so there are some athletes that suffer a loss and just say, well, that's just me. And, you know, life is a bugger. But then there are other athletes that go away and say, this is the beginning of a new chapter. This is where I get stronger. This is where I focus on what would have gotten me through that match. So I think my message here would be that it's always going to be the defeats and it's always going to be the painful experiences that we build on for our next success, because we don't learn that much from success. It's the pain that really gets us focused.
Coming back to the notion of happiness, we know from certainly over the last few years where mental health has risen to the fore of people's conscious and the people's conversation. And in sport, this is so true. We've heard stories about Nemi Osaka, Marty Fish, Michael Phelps. And they can be testament to the fact that their results do not bring them happiness. So in terms of those guys, in terms of all of these guys, we've looked at the notions of being happy. But what about this notion of merging the two compartments of your life, your on-field happiness and off-field happiness? Can you bring that level of happiness into both, if you like, merge it into one? Because the athlete will always separate themselves from other people and say, I am a professional footballer, I'm a professional tennis player. So they define themselves by what they do. So how do you bring that happiness into the whole sphere of their life?
My sense, Keith, is a lot of it's got to have to do with the team that we have around us. And particularly if you're a young athlete, then you need some good and solid and mature people around you. And I think Ash Barty was a very good example of somebody who got a team of people around her that not only she trusted but that she loved. And it doesn't mean that it's necessarily that easy to do that, but I mean that has to be the goal. I mean, another example, Rafael Nadal he was so lucky. He had an uncle who was a coach for however long, and so we're necessarily very dependent on those people that we're with day in, day out. So that doesn't mean that it's an easy fix, but it does mean that in order to have that balance, that we're very dependent on having a team around us that we love and trust and have that kind of maturity and support.
So the team around you is very much also a very significant ingredient to the happiness of anyone.
Yeah, and particularly for a professional athlete, because you are so focused.
So, Andrew, you speak about human relationships a lot. And let's say one of our listeners has an aha moment and they think, you know what? I've never really learned how to build trusting relationships outside maybe my really closest team. And even there, I'm not fully satisfied with the relationships. How does one learn to build better relationships and hence improve the quality of our lives?
Yeah, we could have a whole book on that. but one of the interesting things about building relationships is that we grow up believing that we need to impress people or that we need to do certain things for people to like us. But the amazing thing is it's always about being vulnerable and exposing ourselves. And the minute we're able to say to people that we care about or we're wanting to build a relationship, these are the things that I'm scared of, and these are the things that I worry about, and this is what I love, and this is what I fear, then suddenly other people are drawn toward us. And so, you know, when we're 18 or 20 or even younger, we believe that life is about impressing people, or that we have to be somehow perfect and then people will be drawn towards us, but it's the opposite. And so if we're able to be vulnerable and honest, and also if we're able to just care about people, kindness, then people want to be around us, and so we start something, so life gets better.
Showing your true self is perpetually what you're saying is the key.
Very much so. And you look at people that we're drawn to, that we admire, and they're never. I mean, I mentioned earlier Ash Barty, who particularly has been so loved in the Australian context, but I think is universally liked and respected, and never ever for a moment tried to be anything but this is who I am, even to the point of, okay, three Grand Slams is good. I had a beautiful journey and now I'm moving on. And that is what works for me. And so many other athletes might have felt the pressure that said, well, I need to do this because it's expected. But she was able to say, this is who I am. This is what I care about. This is what I love. And enough.
You know what's to me really interesting in what you say? So many athletes, they focus on two things. They focus on results. And often the more they win, the more stressed they become about defending or exceeding their results. And the other thing is being admired by other people. And both these things have one common denominator, that we can't control them. We can't control results and we can't control what other people think. And if I'm hearing you right, like, once we let go of that and we really focus more on the things we can control, life becomes so much simpler.
Yes, Alon, and a lot of it is, and I've talked about this in some of my books, about unattachment. I mean, ultimately, you focus on what you want, but whether it's in a game or whether it's in life itself, but there's also a point at which you say, I've done the preparation. I'm going out there to give my best, and whatever happens, I will do my best, and I will live with that. And so there is this balance between you focus on what you want, but there's also a point at which you just become unattached. And the more that we're unattached to whether people admire us or like us, then ironically, the perfect example is babies. You know, babies don't care whether you admire them or like them. And also, usually very old people couldn't care less either. And we like both of them, old people, really old people and really young babies, because they're not really caring whether you're impressed or not.
And in a way, that's the paradox of performance and maybe even well-being, to have very ambitious goals, to do all the hard work. But then once you step on the court, to completely detach from any outcomes and just really focus on the moment and on giving your best and seeing what happens.
Entirely. Beautifully said.
I think that brings us to a sort of, if you like, an apex. Can we just sum up, though, Andrew? Because, you know, this notion of being happy is, it's what everyone wants, really. But not everybody really knows what that would mean to them. Because enough is never enough. And that's often the case with athletes. You know, we're only as good as our last win. But if you could just underline it in a sentence or two, how you could bring the notion of, or find this area of being happy for a professional athlete or even anyone, what would be your words of wisdom, just in a couple of lines, if you like?
My first thought is that happiness is a daily decision that we make. When I was, I grew up thinking that when my life got easier, I would be happier. And then at 25, I made a shocking discovery. I discovered that the happiest people I knew had bigger problems than me, and that made no sense. And I realized that the people that I knew that had most meaning and most joy and most direction had very often gone broke. They'd lost loved ones way too soon. They'd come back from cancer. It was the people that had had the most difficult lives, mostly, that I noticed were the people who found most joy and most meaning. And so finally, I had to admit to myself that happiness was not about my life becoming easier. It was about me deciding that every day I choose happiness. It's not an accident. It's something that I consciously choose.
And one last thing. Is it, you're saying it is a choice, but there are some words of wisdom that many would say that it's within us anyway.
Yeah, it's within us when we actually start to look. We find in life what we look for. And if you look for good things in where you live and your partner and your job, and you look for good things in your city, you find them. And if you look for things that you don't like about your life, you find them. So ultimately, and then we become a magnet for more of what we're finding. And so it's about every day you just say, this is my day. This is the day I choose happiness. I'm going to like this practice session. I'm going to find good things in my coach. I'm going to find good things in everything I do today. And that adds up to one happy day. And then you do the same tomorrow.
Well, listen, I think this is a great way to finish. Listen, I've never reached those sort of levels of high performance, athleticism, but I can certainly learn from what you're saying and hope to kind of live in that mindset, which will help anyone, let alone professional athletes. I want to thank you very much for being with us. Just one last thing, Andrew. How do people get to know a bit more about what you do and where they can find you?
Sure. My website is andrewmatthews.com. So that is andrewmatthews.com. So I have a gift for our listeners. I have a free ebook on my website called Being Happy in Challenging Times. And you can find that on the homepage, or if you go to the coaching section of andrewmatthews.com. So it's an ebook that you can read in 7 minutes, and it has my cartoons in there. So I think you'll enjoy it, and I think you'll find it useful, and it will underline some ideas that we've talked about in the podcast, andrewmatthews.com.
Well, awesome. Fantastic. That's so kind of you, Andrew.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much, Andrew. And I know it's an early morning. It's a late night for Alon, but we're very grateful to have you. Do head over to the Thrive website. That's www.thrive, spelt THR, the digit one, VE.space, where you can sign up for further giveaways and, of course, tips. That's www.thrive.com.
thrive, spelled THR1VE dot space. After all, this is your space to thrive.